I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello. What a lovely weekend we've just had. Almost makes you feel like the world's back to normal. As ever, firstly, thank you to our Patreon supporters. This podcast could not have been produced without your help and support. This content is free for everyone, but if you do feel like you're able to support, then please go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram page. You'll find a drop-down box there, which will direct you to the Patreon page. It starts at just £3 a month. If you can, brilliant. If you can't, no worries. But today's episode, which is number 122, I'm going to introduce you to my new mate, Lily Lewis. She's the last in the series of fellow artists that are also showing in Art in the Age of Now at Fulham Town Hall, which, I should add, closes on the 20th of June. So if you've not already been and you want to, you better make a booking a little bit lively. There was a few artists in this show that I'd not had the pleasure of meeting. So when I asked curators Ben Moore and MC Lammas which artists they recommend I speak to, both mentioned Lily. And when I asked some friends who are also in the show who they recommend I speak to, a couple of those mentioned Lily as well. And everybody said her name with a smile, so I knew it was going to be an interesting conversation. And great to talk to she was. So Lily is a multidisciplinary artist. She works in all ranges from painting, drawing, sculpture, mixed media, and she's a poet to boot. She's had work shown in both group and solo exhibitions in London, New York, LA and Paris. Her current solo show is called Safe Places and that's on at Petersham Nurseries in Covent Garden. And I won't mention any more at the moment because Lily talks about the show in this episode. But please come and join me when I talk over Zoom with the very charismatic Lily Lewis.
There was a photographer, and so all the artists had to turn up in like slots because it wasn't legal. We weren't sort of it was COVID regulations. I lost everyone for about 20 minutes, and I was walking around just like shouting, being like hello, as it echoed back. I was like, well, I live here now. Cool. Yeah, exactly. And I couldn't find my way out. I couldn't remember.
As if you'd been moved into another dimension.
Totally, exactly. And then everyone left. It was like it was a very cool dream. If it had been a dream.
Where's your studio, Lily? That looks pretty cool.
It is very cool. It's in Willesden. It's a complete and utter tip. But that's, I think, I saw this meme the other day which said how everyone thinks artist studios are. And there's like a naked woman reclining in the corner. It stays long and everything's really beautiful and plants. And then it said how artist studios actually are. And it's like 4 foot of rubbish that you wade through.
Well, you speak for yourself. I've got a naked over on the chaise lounge as we
speak. Nice. It's only in the summer when it's hot. I don't make her take her clothes off now. It doesn't make any sense. Too cold.
How are you, Lily?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Good. I'm really pleased to have spoken to you. I'm here this afternoon with Lily Lewis, who is an artist, a writer, and a poet. When asking MC Ben and a few other people, what artist could I speak to, your name came up 3 or 4 times.
That's very nice to hear. That's I'm not boring.
Well, yeah, they said it would be a good conversation. And because we've not met, I didn't know what to expect. And yeah, a couple of minutes in, I'm already glad to be speaking to you anyway.
Oh, good. I'm happy to be speaking to you too.
Just to give everyone a little introduction to yourself, the first question I ask is, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
That's a very good question. There are shorthand, I would say that I was a conceptual figurative surrealist, and that's sort of 3 parts of art world jargon, which makes everyone feel very comfortable that I know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about, but longhand explaining that for people that sort of that might not know, conceptual means that I base all of my projects around a concept or an idea. Usually, I'm an academic at heart. I'm not a trained artist. I'm self-taught. So I have an interest or a question that I want to ask, and the concept is then unraveled in a way that I hope never really fully answers the question, but maybe poses some more questions and answers parts of it. Surrealist means that I paint things where they shouldn't be, and figurative means I paint things the way that they look. So I paint things the way they look, places they shouldn't be, around an idea.
Perfect. That's absolutely perfect. Now, we're both in Art in the Age of Now at Fulham Town Hall. I'm down in the basement, in the belly of the beast, and you're amongst MC's group.
An elevated group of women, yes.
Exactly. What is your actual piece that you've got in there for anyone who may be going up there while it's on?
I've got 2 pieces in there. They're graphite drawings and acrylic, and they're quite naughty, but they're both called Shikoshu Gokan, and they are of a woman's hands with a tentacle wrapped around it in a sort of playful, teasing way. And in the back, in acrylic, it's written in crossword grids, hentai. And just explaining it briefly, hentai is the word in Japanese for tentacle porn. And there's a whole section of graphic novels, of art that is dedicated to that. And it all stemmed from a picture called A Dream of the Fisherman's Wife, which was a story of a woman being pleasured by an octopus. Wow. And the title Shikoshu Gokan is from, it's a play on words. In Japan, in Japanese culture, Shikoshu is, again, tentacle porn. And Gokan is the Japanese word for rape. And sorry, gokon is the Japanese word for rape. And it's a phraseology, it's a phrase that I really don't like, because it means that there is a sort of, there is an aggression, there's a violence to it. And that's not what the story was at all. The story was about sort of about play. And I don't know if you know, but in Japan, you're not allowed to show men's genitals.
Yeah. I've seen that. It's strange.
It's illegal. So they used tentacles as a euphemism.
Wow.
And it was supposed to be... Yeah, I know.
Is that any better?
It's exactly,
wow. Okay.
It's a really bad euphemism. But it was supposed to be this sort of tongue-in-cheek fun. And then the West appropriated it and made it something really quite sort of dark and dirty, whereas in fact, actually, the Japanese were like, it's a joke. The West sort of took it and ran with it. And so the word go... let me get this right. Go can is rape. Go con is a meeting. And go con is what you use when boys and girls have a meeting between two different people. So you can have a go con, which is a sort of, you know, a fun meeting.
Yeah.
And so I made it Shikoshu go con, which is two different things, the woman and the octopus meeting and having sort of, you know, a nice time.
Yeah.
And there's nothing directly sexual about it, but it is all about how you as the viewer view it and interpret it yourself, because nothing in there is inherently, there are two boobies in it as well. But
there are.
I forgot about the boobs. It's not aggressive. They're supposed to be very sort of playful.
Well, it's just giving some context to the concept, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it really is a case of, this is what I love about conceptual work, is that the artist means something and there's a direction from it or to it. But then as the viewer, you're encouraged to make your own assumptions as to what that was.
Yeah.
The idea is just the starting point. And then talking to people about the works, someone will say, you know, I didn't realize that they'll say X about one of my pieces. Like, I didn't even realize that. Yes,
yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
Exactly. But you're in there too, which is so exciting. I can't wait to see your works.
As I say, mine's downstairs. But
I want to talk about you, but yes.
Do you know about my backstory?
No.
Okay, I discovered art whilst I was a long-term prisoner.
Brilliant.
For drugs.
I'm so happy that you found art. Full stop. And from that, that's an amazing journey.
Yeah.
That's so bloody cool.
So I've got a 14-year prison sentence.
Yeah.
I served 7. And within the first couple of years, I discovered art, fell in love with art, and mainly conceptual art, which I'd never even heard of. I knew nothing about art when I went into prison. So I fell in love with art. I wanted to do art in a traditional sense, drawing, sculpture, painting, then discovered conceptual. It blew my mind because I didn't get it until I read about it, and then it just fucking clicked in me.
Yeah, doesn't it?
I got what Tracy Emin's tent was and what Marcus Harvey's painting of Myra Hindley was.
Totally.
And then I couldn't find anything on conceptual art, so I wrote to those artists.
Oh, brilliant.
So in the end, I had people like Gavin Turk, Tracy Emin, Sarah Lucas, Marcus Harvey, Mark Wallinger, all writing to me, pushing me.
That is brilliant.
Throughout my sentence.
That is brilliant. I am so, Jesus, that's fucking cool. That's the best part of being in our jobs, I think.
I always get quite emotional when I mention that, because it's fucking changed my life.
Oh, that's,
you know what I mean? It's amazing. But you're right, what you say, it's a beautiful part of this.
Yeah. I think the sort of the structural part, I don't have a gallery, and I'm self-taught and sort of a floating artist. And I find that works best for me, because my least favorite parts are the posturing and the social as in you and me now social, but the going out and the having to play the game. I don't do that. So the fact that you and I, two artists, can meet like this is my favourite bit. The fact that you wrote to 28 replied, and you got friends and mentors and colleagues, actually, from that, peers. That's fucking brilliant.
It really is amazing, isn't it?
It's bloody brilliant. Last year, during lockdown, I was working for a charity that was doing an auction of art for women for a magazine for women. In the prison. Magazine. Exactly. How much do you love that tagline? The View for Women with Conviction. It's so fucking brilliant.
Beautiful, isn't it? I've worked
They are absolutely, they're amazing. But what really fucked me off, actually, I put a piece in that was a sort of abstract view of pants and a bum, with a middle finger sort of blocking the bit that would have been sort of, you know, she was wearing pants. It's actually a self-portrait. And there were two great tits on the middle finger. And it was basically sort of, it was a mention about how sort of, you know, femininity and and sort of gentility of women is appropriated by Disney culture, being like, if you're well behaved and you're like sweet and you do the washing up, nature will come and help you and it'll be on your side. And the whole piece was saying nature's on your side anyway, even if you're some sort of, you know, even if you're some wild and sort of and headstrong, swears like a pirate, you know, badass bitch, nature's still on your side. But the governing body of the prison wouldn't have it in the exhibition. They wouldn't show it to the women that were incarcerated in case it was, it would sort of, you know, it would make them angry.
Yeah.
And I was livid about that, actually.
Yeah. Well, that isn't the View magazine. That is the jail themselves. They have so many restrictions. And it comes into, like, I was going into prisons doing workshops off my own back with the cons.
I'd love to come with you. And next time you do one, I would love to come with you.
Well, there's people crying out for artists, and especially female artists at the moment. And it's not opened up properly yet. But when it does open up, yeah, by all means.
100%. Please, please, please.
There's a charity called, have you heard of Kersler Trust?
No.
It's a charity that it puts on a massive exhibition every year for prisoners' art.
That's brilliant.
It's one in the country, and they take over the Royal Festival Hall.
Exactly. I've been to one of those shows. I went years ago. My mum used to volunteer and in prisons, and she was this sort of, you know, beautiful blonde, still is, to enormous boobs, sort of, you know, the dream of any man that had been...
It was doing the little mental ticks as you were saying it, actually.
Blonde, blue-eyed, massive, funny, the dirtiest jokes you've ever heard. And she was in there, and she went to go, so she regularly visited this guy called Sol, who was called the Weatherman, and he used to run with the craze.
Nice.
And he used to sort of tell, he used to ask her to sort of pass notes to someone on the outside about that. What was it? I think it was he basically says race predictions, and she was almost positive that she was passing notes that weren't anything to do with the race at all.
Yeah, he escaped via helicopter a few weeks later.
On a helicopter.
Don't know how it happened.
Yes, exactly. On a helicopter called the same name as a racehorse. The time of Ainsley.
Yeah, he escaped from Kempton prison at 3:15.
Exactly. Who'd have thunk it? On her lady's graces.
You're speaking about your family here. Was there any art in your family growing up?
A lot. I was very, very lucky. My mum trained as an interior architect, and she also grew up around art. My great grandfather was an art collector, and he was also the first Q at MI6.
Wow.
Yeah, really cool.
Oh, he invented, wow.
Really cool. He was one of the Dam Busters. He invented the first invisible ink. He invented the non-reflective black paint that went on the bombers. And he was a serious dude. He was an art collector and a philosopher and a chemist, actually. He was the Don of spectroscopy at Oxford, which is the study of light. And he made my great-grandmother a dress entirely made out of fractal crystals. So it looked like she was wearing rainbows when she walked.
Wow.
Just so cool. He actually bought the Botticelli that sold at Sotheby's a couple of months ago for the highest sort of amount. We sold it. Well before that was when we sold it. It wasn't a verified. Yeah, exactly. We sold it for sort of, you know, a pot pie and a Greg's coffee, and then it went. But it was really nice to see it, and it was nice
and
to see
it out for several mentions.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. We're like, oh, no, shoulda, coulda. But I was very lucky to grow up with that and other pieces. And my dad was the chairman of the Wallace Collection for quite a long time. And the one thing I remember him teaching me was you can always spot a boucher because it's boobs, bums and balls.
Excellent. So yeah, I mean, you've already just told me about, you've got possibly one of the coolest families I've sort of heard about, you know. When was it you decided that you wanted to become an artist?
When I was very little, I'd make things, and I was never taught that it wasn't ever it wasn't a viable path. It wasn't something that someone said, this is something you could be. You know, you were good at art, someone shoved something on a fridge and you were proud of yourself, but it wasn't really a path. And then I, like I said, I went, I did English literature and psychoanalysis.
Yeah.
And then came out and I got this dead-end job working for, they made slippers. It was a company that made slippers.
Brilliant.
And I came and I was doing, it was called Morelands. And I had a job sort of in their offices. I wasn't, I did, to this day, I don't know what I was supposed to be doing. To this day, I have no idea. And I was going absolutely mad. And I ended up painting when I was at home. And I was about 21. And I painted when I was at home and I filled my art with work that I'd made. And I invited a gallerist friend of my father's to supper. And a lot of people say, like, I don't know how it happened. It just happened. It didn't just happen. It was hustle. I planned the entire thing. It was very, very,
of course.
It was completely contrived. And he came over and he went, oh, all of this art, it's nice. Whose is it? And I was like, oh, funny you mentioned that. It's mine. He then said, have you ever thought about being an artist? I said, no, hasn't even crossed my mind.
Never, me?
Never. He says, quit your job. And in 4 months, if you can get a, if you can get some, I've got a space in the billing, and if you can get a show together in 4 months, we'll have a solo for you, and we'll see where you go from there. And I worked, I don't think I slept for the entire 4 months.
Nice.
And I loved it. I loved every second. So that sort of torn, distraught misery of having so much to do and no time to do it in.
Yeah.
And the show sold out, and that was it. Been an artist ever since.
Perfect.
And but the hustle never stopped. That was at Talisman on the King's Road in, I'm not going to tell you the age, the year, because
simple maths will define
exactly.
You.
I was 21, so it was 5 years ago now.
It was just the other day.
The other day, last week, weirdly.
Which piece that you've created, Lily, has got the strongest emotional connection?
I did a self-portrait over lockdown, actually. And my dog and constant companion for 13 years died last year in the middle of lockdown. And I hadn't really written anything and painted anything last year. I was in a bit of a funk, actually, for a couple of months. Yeah. And this was the first thing I painted. And it was the first poem that I'd written in a long time. And that it has a very firm... a very firm place in my mind.
Nice.
But there's a piece that is very firmly in my heart, and that was the first painting I did for a show that I made last year. And it's of a tiger head on a caterpillar body.
I've seen that.
With a sort of penis on the other end, and it's on a red circus ball, and it's sort of a self-portrait in that. My grandfather would say that gender was non-binary. It was a sliding scale. And the tiger looks like it's roaring, but it's yawning. And the penis on the other end looks like it's sort of flaccid, but actually is just sort of just chilled, really.
No one's
got anything to prove. And it's sort of jokey. And there's the performativity of the circus ball. And behind it, underneath sort of blue stripes, it says, burn her, she knows too much. Yes. And it's a reference to the Salem witch trials, and I think that's probably my first self-portrait, but hopefully sort of more overarching in terms of, I hope other people could associate with it as well. That one.
Well, that was the one image that I was going to ask you about, and I was trying to figure a way how to work around to ask you. So that was falling in my lap like that. Was
perfect. Just playing with your hands.
I'd seen something of yours about the adults are made from games that they play as a child.
Yeah, the show was called There's No Such Thing as Grown-Ups. And I'd given a lecture in Mexico about how children, the aesthetic and narrative that you give to children informs the society they build when they grow up. And so I sort of hypocritically backdated Stalin's favourite toy and Hitler's favourite story, and I sort of pulled it out of my arse as to what they were, because historically that's not documented, but you can pretty much guess. So Hitler would be the Grimm brothers, which was a huge wave of nationalism in Germany.
Yeah.
And in Austria, there were certain toys that were given to sort of boys of the background that Stalin would have been, that would have, there's an amazing phrase by an academic whose name I cannot remember at the moment, but I'll remember later. She said, there is no such thing as play. It is the work of childhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it struck me as so important, because not only now can you predict basically sort of society in 20 years time by the morals and the values that are fed to children through television programs and stories that are written now, it's not just the reflection of where we are now, it's the prediction of where we want to be. And we think that technology is our future, but we still got to remember that someone's using that technology.
Exactly.
And I think it's pretty key. So that tiger caterpillar penis on the ball was actually a reference to a sort of childlike view of gender.
Yeah.
And sort of sexuality, and how if you didn't know what it was, that would be a sort of Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland approximation of it. Actually, it's a reference to the hooker smoking caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland. It's the first gendered person that she meets, and it's about growing up and coming to terms with sort of your adulthood, and it makes no sense to her, and he sits there and chats bollocks. And
well, what you're saying there about the children growing from what they played with as children, coming from like Hap Council estate with my background, going to prison, and then I've sort of transformed into a different person. Mm. When I come to having children, and I still live on a council estate, and I was so scared how my son would grow up, which there was two roads that he could have taken, both of which I've been down. Mm. And I so hoped it would be the road I'm on now, you know, the nice, honest, rather than going down the scallywag, you know, the scallywag line, you know, starting off as a scamp and growing, you know, down that road. And I was probably overly protective, but I was so scared. And yeah. I mean, he's turned out, he's a beautiful child. You know, he's a lovely, lovely, lovely 16-year-old boy, you know. But I was aware of that for his first 5 or 7 years. You know, it would be no toy guns. Yeah. He wouldn't be watching stuff that, because I had no idea. Sorry, this is going up, me going off on a...
No, I love this. I love this. This is exactly, you're so spot on. This is exactly what the sort of the thought process of the show is supposed to be. I don't have children, so I'm coming from a place of the idea of it. But and so you've done something I've not yet done, and I salute you beyond anything, because I can imagine how unbelievably terrifying it would be.
I didn't know what was the turning point for me as a child, because my first 3 years I was an angelic little kid, and then from like 4 or 5, whatever age it was, I chose not to go down the nice boy line, mm-hmm. and go down the naughty boy line. And I know that I enjoyed the mischief I got up to, because it was bloody good fun. Mm. But I didn't know what the turning point was. I didn't know whether it was like my dad leaving as a child. I didn't know whether it was getting into fights and enjoying the victory. You know, I didn't know whether it was stealing something and enjoying the prize that I got. You know, I didn't know what it was. So I just made him do nothing that I'd done as a child, you know.
Exactly. And do you think there's a huge sort of, at least sort of from the child psychology books that I've read, and from the children that I've got five godchildren, and I love them to pieces, and I see in them the same thing that I see weirdly with dog training. So with dog training, you have a particular breed of dog that has a particular set of characteristics and character traits that you have to, and it's your job as an owner or a trainer, and also as a parent or a guardian of children, of dogs, of anything, to channel their natural instincts into a good way. So if you've got a pit bull, they're naturally, they've got strong prey drive, and they're quite sort of bullish. and they want to be sort of top dog. What you do agility training, or you do gameplay. So you channel it into constructive ways. So if you've got a kid who turns four and he shows propensity to being a little bit naughty, you channel that into a way that would be constructive for him instead of destructive. I do a lot of work with youth, or did before COVID, with youth centres. And I really, truly, truly believe that that's the one thing that London needs at the moment. We need more youth centres.
We need more youth centres. For fucking decades.
Exactly. And there was one mayoral candidate this year, Sean, I can't remember his name. He was the one
Hayley?
Who was interested. Yes, exactly. He was the conservative one. Not that that really matters, but he was the one guy that said that his major thing was youth clubs and youth initiatives, because the way that we can tackle knife crime is not by tackling the knife crime. It's by getting everyone young occupied in their afternoons, in their evenings, yeah. of getting them, as you said before, rolling back to, you know, what you do as children, you create as adults, getting them sort of integrated into ways that they're not being told off for who they are.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a pit bull that's never going to be a chihuahua. You've got a kid that likes the thrill of stealing something, or likes getting into fights. You make them, you know, you make them responsible for money in something that goes to their community.
Yeah.
So they know the value of money.
It's not really the actual fight that they enjoyed. It mm-hmm. was the victory or the winning, or because I saw when I wanted to change my life when I was in prison. I wanted to change, but I knew that all of my friends were criminals. Everything I'd done, spoke about, read, it was all crime related. And I didn't know how to get out of that. I was in a bit of a quandary because I wanted to get out of it, but I knew nothing about how to. Yeah. Then all of a sudden these artists came into my life, and then they had the same sort of group ethic to what the criminals mm. had. It was a strong community. They was all trying mm. to help each other. You know, there was a sort of hierarchy. There was a ladder to climb. And it didn't matter yeah. if you slipped off of that ladder, because there'd be people to help you back on it again. You know,
absolutely.
All the small elements that I found within the art world, within the criminal world, I was starting to discover.
Freudian slip there, by the way.
Yeah, I suppose it was very much so. but yeah, I was finding similarities within this new world. So it showed yeah. to me that all you need is to take someone out of their environment, even just mentally, and put them in a new environment. And that was it. Mm. Because I was still in the fucking criminal environment.
Absolutely.
All of a sudden, what these were doing didn't appeal to me as much as what these were doing.
Exactly,
and
exactly.
It was beautiful. It was like heroin and methadone, you know?
Yeah, exactly, absolutely. But also I think what you just said is so prescient too, in that it was a slip, but the art world and the sort of the world of deviance are actually very similar. I think that as artists, we're not part of society. We never have been, we never will be. I think there is something inherent in us that didn't go into a 9-to-5, that structure made us feel lonely and separate. And yeah. I think that there is something about, as you said, there is such a structure of community in the art world, because we're all outsiders. Every single one of us is an outsider, that the rest of the world, we feel quite lonely in it.
Yeah.
And so when we've got this community of deviants, and I love that. I love that it's a deviant as in deviation. We deviated from the norm, and we're in this together. And I think you're so right. And it is this wonderful, bizarre world of people who can be bizarre together. And I can make something that, you know, is about tentacle porn and boobs and go, no, it's nice. It's sweet. It's a really sweet. Sort of.
Yeah. Although in the criminal world, you'd probably make more money from it.
That's what the gallerists are there for.
Brilliant. talking of galleries, Lily, if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, God. Okay. Me, Paula Rego, Dali.
Nice.
I want to say Leonora Carrington as well. Yeah, Leonora Carrington. She was an amazing female surrealist. And Bresson basically thought that all women were there to sort of amuse the male surrealists. And he told them where to go.
Yeah, he'd be all right in 21st century art world.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He'd have a space here. Right in front of my foot. five of us. Pornarigo, Dali, Picabia. He did a lot of multi-layered abstract figuration. And you can see it in today's work. I think Antonia Showering and Alexander James, they draw a lot from him, and he was the first person to do it. And I think that he'd be very, very cool in the show. Okay, so that's Paula Rigo, Dali, Leonora Carrington, Picabia, and I've got one more. I'm going to choose a living one because someone's got to help me with the admin. Grayson Perry.
Perfect. That's perfect set. And there is a final question of my set of questions, which is, if you wasn't an artist, what would you like to be?
A criminal. No.
You're not the first person to say that.
Genuinely, absolutely. But I've got this sort of idealized view of it, that I'd be an amazing cat burglar, like Catherine Zeta-Jones in that film with when Anthony Hopkins is a cradle snatcher.
Brilliant.
I think, or a pirate. But if we're actually being serious, this is something that I could actually change now. There's nothing. I've done myself a disservice. There is nothing else in the world. I would love to be able to say that if this all went tits up tomorrow, I could train as an accountant and be happy. But it's this or bust, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I did a lot of, I trained in a lot of things that I didn't actually end up doing for very long. and so I'm very overqualified to do nothing and underqualified to do anything.
Yeah, that's not too bad a way to live your life.
But they were all down the path of making something. So it would have to be constructive. I'd like to be a child psychologist or a psychiatrist. I'd like to be an art therapist if I wasn't an artist.
And not making slippers.
Absolutely never again.
Well, the sub questions I've got here, the first one being, what have you got coming up? And the world has just sort of started to reopen again, slowly creaking its doors open to see what the outside world's like. And you were saying you've got a solo show in June.
I do.
What's it about?
So I've got two shows at the moment. I've got works in Fulham Town Hall, and I've also got works in a show in Paris at the Rutowski 68 Gallery.
Nice.
And the solo show, which I'm very excited about, is opening in the preview week is June 8th, and please everyone come along. I will be sitting there on my own. Hang on 1 second. Guys, by the way, sorry, I did a podcast, but I'm sorry. Is that all right?
I don't care about noise in the background.
Okay,
at all.
Brilliant, perfect. So I'm doing it opens June 8th with the preview week, and it's called Safe Places. Nice. And it's a series of it's quite a few vignettes of faces, male and female, and they're all actors and actresses from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And that was sort of the first time that this ideal of projected perfection was globally available. And the natural progression of that now is sort of selfies and our Instagram culture. But each one of these actors and actresses, and I purposely didn't choose Monroe or Dietrich or anyone that was sort of very well known.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were all victims of domestic abuse, sexual abuse,
oh, wow,
bigotry, homophobia. And every single one of them, you look at them and you think, God, that person's life was perfect, or they were these sort of icons.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd have absolutely no idea of what was going on in their lives. And the pieces are pencil drawings on they're really big, large scale on canvas and on paper, and the frame is part of the work. So on the inside of the glass,
nice,
there's makeup pigment in acrylic medium, rather sort of naively and crudely on the glass, so separate from the paper and the canvas, drawn on but opaque and transparent, so that you can see the face behind it, and it's drawn. You can see, there's one behind me actually, if you can see.
I'd seen these, yeah. I think it was that one that I saw.
Yeah, exactly. And there, it's that space between the projection and the rather sort of naive, childlike makeup and the actual reality of the body.
Is it called Leonora?
One of them was called, one of them is
That's
called
the
Leonora.
That's the one I saw.
Exactly. And it's actually to raise awareness and support for Refuge, the domestic violence charity. Numbers of domestic violence have gone up by over, I think, 260% in the last year alone. And numbers are coming in even more. They're really, really struggling. And I wanted to do something that both got art on the streets again and got people aware of it. A lot of people have come out of this and we're fine. It was tough, but we're fine. And our lives are going to carry on, but a lot of people aren't. And I think that we need to take a moment to wait for everyone else and to lend a hand to help other people up.
Perfect. That's beautiful.
Thank you. I hope, well, come, please. Anyone that's listening, please
and
come.
Where is that? You've said when it is, but where is it?
Carriage Hall on Floral Street in Covent Garden. And it opens on the 8th and it finishes on the 4th of July.
Perfect. I'll put a link to that in the
Please do. I'll send you the press for it as well. And I'll send you the invitations as well. And then, everyone's welcome and I'll be in there and I'm looking forward to seeing as many people as possible.
Brilliant. Lily, where can anyone see your work, be it website or social media?
Website and Instagram. My Instagram handle is Tiger Lily Lewis. And my email is my website. It's my home telephone number at my
my date of birth and mother's maiden name.
Exactly. And my council code and bank. My website is lily-lewis.com.
Excellent. Well, Lily, that's all my questions asked. Hopefully I'll see you the night this comes out, which is Thursday the 20th, at Fulham Town Hall. For Art in the Age of Now. Lily, thank you so much for your time. Sorry to butt in there. There we go. How good was that? Lily Lewis. And my God, how much would I have liked to have met her granddad. Not only was he a dam buster, he was MI6's first ever Q. I wonder if he was there when James Bond joined. But getting back to Lily, what a bloody fun conversation that was. I loved it. And I hope you enjoyed it too. But if I can just remind you of her current exhibition, Safe Places. It's on at Petersham Nurseries in Covent Garden. And man, what a space that is if you've not seen it. And it's raising funds for the charity Refuge, which provides specialist support for women and children experiencing domestic violence. And like Lily said in this episode, since the first lockdown in March 2020, domestic violence has gone up over 200%. And with that statistic in mind, I think it's only right that I should say that if you're a victim of domestic violence, or if you'd like to find out how to donate, or just want more information, you can go over to Refuge website, which is www.refuge.org.uk, or their Instagram handle is Refuge Charity. Yeah, making that first move can be a life changer. As I said at the start of this podcast, Art Below's Art in the Age of Now at Fulham Town Hall closes on the 20th of June. So if you've not yet been and you want to, you have to book your tickets via Eventbrite. It's an experience you won't want to miss, that's for sure. Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. Or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated. But either way, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.